Hare Krishna, I welcome all the devotees to Bhakta Sangha Jepa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Keshavananda Prabhuji for enlightening on us on topic Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 12th Chapter, 17th Verse onwards. Hare Krishna Keshavananda Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guru Maharaj Ki Jai. Thank you so much Prabhuji for joining and giving your association. We are very fortunate to have today you are on the call, Prabhu. Please take over the call, Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, you are muted yourself.
Sorry. Now is my voice clear?
Yes, Prabhuji, yes.
Fine. Okay, so I'll just start the talk. So we are discussing 4th canto, 12th chapter, 17th verse. And this is Guru Maharaj goes back to Godhead. This is the chapter's name. So I'll just pray Mangalacharan and then we'll start. But before that, I'll just speak invocation and then Mangalacharan and then we'll start. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 4th canto, 12th chapter, 17th verse. Tasyam Vishuddha Karana Shivavar Vighayah Padhasanam Jitamarun Manasahrit Akashah स्थूले दधार भगवत प्रतिरूप एतत् ध्यायंस्तत् अव्यवहितो व्यसृजत् समाधौ. Srila Prabhupada writes in translation and Prabhupada, in Badrikashram, the Rupa Maharaj's senses became completely purified because he bathed regularly in crystal clear purified water. He fixed his sitting position by yogic practice, controlled the breathing process and the air of life. In this way, senses were completely withdrawn. Then he concentrated his mind on the Archvigraha form of the Lord, which is the exact replica of the Lord, and thus meditating upon him, entered into complete trance. Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. Here is a description of Ashtanga Yoga system to which Dhruva Maharaj was already accustomed. Ashtanga Yoga was never meant to be practiced in fashionable city. Dhruva Maharaj went back to Badrikashram and in a solitary place alone he practiced yoga. He concentrated his mind on the Archvigraha, the worshipable deity of the Lord, which exactly represents the Supreme Lord, and thus thinking constantly of that deity, he became absorbed in trance. Worship of Archvigraha is not idol worship. Archvigraha is an incarnation of the Lord in the form appreciable by a devotee. Therefore, the devotee engages in temple. In the service of the Lord, Archvigraha, a form made of sthool material objects such as stone, metal, wood, jewel, and paint. All of these are called sthool or physical representations. Since the devotees follow regulatory principles of worship, even though the Lord is there in his physical form, he is not different from his original spiritual form. Thus, the devotee gets the benefit of achieving ultimate goal of life, that is to say, becoming always absorbed in the thought of the Lord. This incessant thought of the Lord, as prescribed in Bhagavad Gita, makes one the topmost yogi. Now what I want to do is I want to read the next verse also, because these two verses are linked together. So I'll just go to the next verse and read the Sanskrit and the translation. The next 4:12:18 is Bhaktim harau bhagavati pravahan ajasram ananda bashpa kalaya muhur Ardhyamana Viklidyamana Hridaya Pulaka Chitango Na Atmanam Asmarad Asahu Iti Muktalinga. Prabhupada writes, because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes, his heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Guru Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. Now, the purport I'll include in the lecture because the purport is quite long. But I'll include it in my lecture. I'll include the points. And then later you all can go and read it. So, but we'll go back now, 4:12:17 and then go to 4:12:18. Okay. I'll just stop for Mangala Charan. Om Agyanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Putane Swamibhagadamayam Tadati Sapanantikam Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisheshunyavadi Paishtate Shtarine Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, these two verses are very, very important. I mean to say all verses are important, but these two verses are specifically important to her because there's an important question and one important confusion which these two verses will help to solve. And also help us to gain insight thereby. So as we'll be solving the question or the confusion, we'll gain some good insights into devotional practice. Now, Dhruva Maharaj goes to back to Godhead. Now we know that Dhruva Maharaj went to Bhadrika Ashram and he did tapasya at the end of his life. And now, at the end, I mean to say Prabhupada, at the end he went. So in the previous verse it is said at the end he went to Bhadrika Ashram. Whole life he actually practiced, he did many sacrifices, he performed his duties and now left his home and went to forest and he practiced Dhyan Yoga. Now what he was doing, by the way, in Bhadrika Ashram, what he was doing is that he was following Ashtang Yoga. That's the whole point, Ashtang Yoga. Ashtang Yoga is, Dhyan Yoga is also called Ashtang Yoga. Dhyan Yoga is actually not called Ashtang Yoga, by the way. It's not called Ashtang Yoga. Dhyan Yoga is called Dhyan Yoga, but the most popular form of Dhyan Yoga is Ashtang Yoga. Let me put it like that. Now, who made it popular? Patanjali. Patanjali. He made this system popular of Ashtang Yoga. A type of Dhyan Yoga, Ashtang Yoga, which he made popular. Patanjali. And from where did he get this type of Dhyan Yoga? Was that his speculation? No. He got this system from Vedas, and this is mentioned in Vedas. Especially there are few Upanishads which are called as Yoga Upanishads, like Yog Bindu Upanishad. That's one of the famous Upanishads. And then Dhyan Bindu Upanishad. That's one of the another famous Upanishad. So these Upanishads which are part of Vedas, they mention these eight steps how to do Dhyan. And it took from that, he developed it in an applied manner. And then he propagated system of Patanjali Ashtanga Yoga. And it became famous and popular. So this means that there are other types of Dhyan Yoga also. So what other types of Dhyan Yogas are there? The first is Shashtanga Yoga. Now Ashtanga means eight steps. There are eight steps. Shashtanga means six steps, which is also called as Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga has six steps. That is why it's called Shashtanga Yoga or Hatha Yoga. And then there are other types of Dhyan Yoga. For example, Dharand Yoga refers to one type of Dhyan Yoga where there are just four steps. So, and then there is Shiva Yoga also, another type of Dhyan Yoga, which is Shiva Yoga, where I think there are seven or five steps, something like that. I exactly forgot. But the whole point is there are many types of Dhyan Yoga. The Ashtanga Yoga is the most popular one. It seems at the time of Dhruva Maharaj, it was the most popular, also the most popular one, and he was practicing that. And so as the name goes, Ashtanga Yoga refers to eight steps. Ashta means eight. So he was following eight steps. And what were those? Those are mentioned in this verse. Now the first step was Tasyam Vishuddhakarana. Now Vishuddhakarana means Prabhupada writes as purified his senses. Now he made his senses Vishuddha. Karana means senses, Vishuddha means Shuddha, pure. He purified his senses. The first step is purify your senses. That means don't do those things which will make your senses impure. Keep your senses pure. That's the whole point. Keep yourself pure by avoiding those things which are not to be done, which will make your senses impure. And that's why the first step of Ashtanga is called as Yama, which is mentioned here by this term Vishuddha Karana. Yama means don't do prohibited activities. Yama means prohibited activities. Yama in Sanskrit means death, from which the word Yamraj comes. Death. Death. Why Yama is called death? Because death ceases all the functions of a body. They are ceased. So At the time of death, all the senses are ceased, they stop. So that's why death is called Yama. And Yamraj is called as Yamraj because he's the lord of death. He's a lord of stopping things. He stops. He stops your activity. He stops your life. He stops your body senses. Now it's time to stop and it's time for judgment. Stop whatever you're doing, nonsense. What nonsense you're doing, stop it. And now it's time for judgment. It's enough. Enough is enough. We gave you 50, 60 full years to actually improve yourself. You didn't. No further time. Stop. So you might say, so please give me one more second. Finish. Stop. That's where death is called Yama. And that's called Yamraj. So Yama means stop. So the first step of Ashtanga Yoga is Yama, means to stop. Stop those things. That's why Ashtanga Yoga teaches, the first step teaches to stop those things which will destroy the purity of your senses. Now traditionally, typically Ashtanga Yoga refers five things which are to be stopped. Yama is... So it refers to five things which are to be stopped. Now let's see what are those. Well, you can always check what are those five things. But if you go traditionally, those five things are for example Asteya. Asteya is there. And this Asteya means, for example, you should not, you should not be a thief, or for example, control your senses like that. So that is one more Yama. You should control your senses. You should not steal. Yeah, you should not steal, for example. And then there are others. You can just have a look. It's simple. You can have a look on Google. So yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Fine. This Asteya, that means you should not steal. The first thing Patanjali says, you should not steal. And then there is Brahmacharya. That means, of course, you all know Brahmacharya. Abhrasta can also be Brahmacharya. So Brahmacharya means stop illicit sex. And then there is Aparigraha. Aparigraha means you should not keep things more than required. Third thing. And then the fourth thing is Saucha, means you should always remain clean. And then fifth is Santosh. Santosh means don't have so many desires. Be content. Now that's Yama. Yama means stop those things. So and then you can check. So the whole point is yama is a negative thing. Yama is a negative thing, which you don't have to do. So by avoiding those things, you don't become impure. So that is vishuddha karna. That's the point there. The aim of stopping is to keep yourself pure. That's the whole point. The next step is Shiva var vigahaya. So the text says he was taking a bath in pure water. And what is this? This is niyama. Niyama means those things which you should do. So even in devotion we have yam niyam, isn't it? Those things which should be avoided, those things which should have been done. Same thing in Patanjali. So those things you should do. So five things you should do, Patanjali says. And so like tapasya you should do. And then you should, simplicity, you should be simple like that. Swadhyaya, you should always read scriptures, isn't it? So like that, what has to be done? Read scriptures, have simplicity, I mean to say develop virtues, and then do austerities. Some things are not to be done, like these, some things have to be done. So these things are the Shiva Bhar Vighaya. He took bath in purified senses. He followed some regulations. He didn't do something, Vishuddha Karna, and he was doing something, isn't it? Like that Yam Niyam. These are first two steps of Patanjali. And then it comes, so of course the text says he took bath in purified water. That's one of the part of Niyama. He was following some rules and regulations. Bhagavatam simply gives one example, and by this we can understand there are many other things he was doing and many other things he was avoiding. Now the third step is Yam Niyam Asan. So the next word in the verse goes Baddha Asanam. He sat in Asan. He was doing asanas also. And then the next step in Patanjali is Pranayam. So the verse says Jitta Marun. So Jitta Marun means Marun. So Marun is actually, it's not Marun, it is Marut. So he conquered his ears. This is Pranayam. You see exact sequence. The Bhagavatam gives exact sequence of Dhyana Yoga. He did Pranayam. And then comes Manasa Ahrit Akash. Aksha. Manasa Ahrit Aksha. Aksha. So that means he actually withdrew his senses. He withdrew his mind. And so after Pranayam, the step comes Pratyahar. Pratyahar, Patanjali says, Pratyahar means withdraw your mind. Withdraw your mind from all objects and focus it. So that's the same thing here, pratyahar. So yam niyam asan pranayam, pratyahar, and then the next step of Patanjali is dadhara. The next step is dharana. So the verse is sthule dadhara. You see the point? Sthule dadhara. And then what he did is, so after he did yam niyam, he put asan, he did pranayam. After doing pranayam, he just sat and then he brought all his mind back from everywhere. He focused his mind, pratyahar, and then dharana. Dharana means he focused. He started focusing his mind. So he started concentrating his mind on what? Bhagavat pratirupayata. On the form of Lord. Now, here's a point. If you go to 11th canto, Krishna also mentions Ashtanga Yoga. There's a whole chapter there, Dhyan Yoga. Krishna is explaining Dhyan Yoga. And in Gita also, Krishna explains 6th chapter Dhyan Yoga. Now there, Krishna says, so Krishna is talking about Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dharana. And when he comes to the point of Dharana, he specifically mentions, and Prabhupada also mentions the purports. Prabhupada mentioned the purports of first canto also everywhere, that the whole point is to meditate on the form of Lord Vishnu. That's the whole point. No other meditation should be there. You should not meditate on some dot, as modern Dhyan Yogis recommend, meditate on fire in your heart, or some dot, or empty your mind. focus your mind on yourself. It's all nonsense. It says Bhagavat Pratirupayata. Krishna specifically says, meditate on me. In that, when you approach that limb, that step of Patanjali Yoga, which is after practicing preliminary steps, Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahar, and you reach Pradharana, then you should focus on me, or form of Lord Vishnu. And that's what Dhruva was doing here. Dhruva was meditating on the form of Lord. Prabhupada mentions the Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says that the form of Lord is all auspicious, because it is not mental speculation. Although the form of Lord is being meditated by mind, Dhruva is using his mind. And as Ashtanga Yoga, you use your mind to actually think of the form of Lord. You concentrate your mind on the form of Lord. Prabhupada says he concentrated his mind on Archviksha, which exactly represents Supreme Lord. And thus thinking constantly, he became absorbed in trance. So although you're using your mind to focus on the form of Lord, but the point is, because the form of Lord is bona fide, it is mentioned in scriptures, it is not speculation, it will purify the mind. And Krishna will accept that dharana, that focus. He will accept. So it's almost like holy name, just like we chant holy names. So we chant holy names by using material tongue. But then holy names have power. So Krishna accepts it, because holy name is Krishna. So the form of Lord is Krishna. The words of Lord is Krishna. The words of Lord is God. The form of Lord is Lord. There's no difference. So even if you're meditating on the form of Lord by your mind, so especially in the system of Dhyana Yoga, then Krishna has mercy, because why? Because you are obeying scriptures. You are meditating on the form of Lord, which He has recommended in scriptures. So He will give mercy. So that is Pratyahara. And the word used is Bhagavat Pratirup. Bhagavat Pratirup is Bhagavat Pratirup means so the word used, so the word is not used Bhagavat Rup, it is Bhagavat Pratirup. Now Bhagavat Rup means the original form of Lord, spiritual form, Prabhupada mentions there. But Bhagavat Pratirup means he was meditating on the physical form. Prabhupada mentions, even though there is a physical form, he's not different from his original spiritual form. He was meditating on a physical form. He was meditating on the form of a deity by using his mind, Bhagavat Pratirup. But nevertheless, because physical form is a replica, is made on the description of the original form, and thus they are non-different. So that's why the effect is the same. So he was meditating on Bhagavat Pratirup. So that is dharana, and then the next step is dhyana, and the text says dhyayam stad vyavahito. Dhyayams, he did dhyana. Dhyana, he then started. He actually dhyana means he started focusing his mind on Lord's lotus feet now. As a servant, dhyan now. So in dharana, he's simply focusing on the form. But in dhyana, there is also concept behind that focusing. So in dharana, so in dharana, it's just like, you have a form and you're focusing. You're just gazing at it ceaselessly. Without any conception. But in dhyana, there is a conception. Yes, this is Lord. This is my Lord. You see the point there? This is the difference between dhyana and dharana. And he's like this, he's like this, he's like this. So he's meditating on the qualities also now. In dhyana, there's just form. In dhyana, because there's a conception, he's meditating on the qualities also. In dhyana, qualities also come. And eventually, then comes Samadhi. So last step of Patanjali is Samadhi. And the text says, visrijati samadhau. He entered into trance. And in samadhi, you are meditating on the pastimes. You have actually entered pastimes. So dharana means form. Of course, I mean to say dharana, dhyan, samadhi, form, qualities, pastimes are there. But dharana is more focused on form. Dhyana is more focused on qualities. Samadhi is more focused on the pastimes. And that's trance. That's how it goes. Trance. Dhyayam stad vyavahito. Now this word is used, vyavahito. Avyavahito. So vyavahito means obstructions. Avyavahito means without stopping. And this word comes in Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse? Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita says, Yeah, vyavsayatmika buddhi eka guru nandana vyavsayatmika vyavahito. It's the same word. Krishna says, one whose intelligence is one-pointed. Avyavsayinam, whose intelligence is not one-pointed. So one-pointed. So that's the whole point. So vyavahito is the same word. So Krishna says, Manu's intelligence is one-pointed. And the word he uses is avyavasainam. Eka kuru nandana. Avyavasainam. Avyava. It's the same thing. But there it is avyavasainam. Here it is avyavahita. It's the same thing. Dhyayam stad avyavahito. So the point is, a person whose focus is one-pointed. In trance, focus is one-pointed. That means there is no obstructions. Absolutely no anarthas. You are finished. Not even slightest trace of anartha. You are in trance. You, at this stage, have forgotten your body, your mind. You are beyond everything. You are simply situated in your soul. Samadhi means you have entered the pastimes. Entering pastimes means samadhi. Samadhi means sam means samyak. Adhi means intelligence. So when your intelligence is fully pure and fully absorbed in God, and that means at this stage there is no false ego. There's no false ego. There are no confusions. There are no errors. There are no anarthas. There are no misinterpretations. There are no doubts. There is no ignorance. There is simply you and Krishna. You in your original form, Swarup Siddhi. This is, he has achieved his original form in Samadhi. His original form is revealed now in Samadhi, the person who entered Samadhi. And then he can understand that he and Lord are one. One in the sense, I mean to say, one in desire. That's the whole point there. That, of course, we all understand as devotees. Because Mayavadi says you become one when you attain Samadhi. Mayavadis are very fond of this Ashtanga Yoga. All gurus, they just say Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam. They're all doing all these things. And then they say, at the end is you become one with God. But that's complete nonsense, because Gaudiya Vaishnava conception is, yes, you become one with God. The Patanjali says you become one with God. But the whole point is, what's the meaning of that one? The meaning is your desire becomes one with God. Now you don't have any other personal agendas, personal desires. The whole obstruction in devotional life is your own personal desires, personal agendas, personal plans, personal likings, personal dislikings. These are all problems, and we are all trapped in this. So, but in samadhi, they all vanish. They all finished. You simply desire what God desires. That's samadhi. Because in the stage of samadhi, you are in your original spiritual form. You have decontacted from body. You have decontacted from the subtle body, from mind, intelligence, ego. It's gone. So that's samadhi. And that is perfection of Krishna consciousness, by the way. Krishna consciousness is this. To actually unite your desire with the desire of Lord. And that's the most difficult part, you see. And that's why there's Ashtanga. I mean to say, who is foolish to follow all these things? Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyan, then Samadhi. If it was so easy to actually to actually unite your desire with the desire of God and do not desire anything else. It was so easy. Then why? What the hell is going on? Why are these so many steps? There should be just one step, samadhi. It doesn't happen like that, isn't it? We all know that it doesn't happen, and it's difficult. So anyway, Dhruva Maharaj practiced this Dhyana Yoga, and he reached samadhi. He reached perfection. That was Dhruva. The mind, we know. And Prabhupada says, actually Dhruva was accustomed. Now that's the whole point. He was accustomed to do this. So it was easy for him. He did it. Now, there are two questions here. If this is clear. But anyway, before I come to the questions, there are two points there in this. So what we can learn from Dhyana Yoga as devotees. And that's one big question. Why this process is first of all explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavatam, 11th canto, even here, why Sukadeva Goswami mentions this. Sukadeva Goswami should have simply said, Dhruva, the devotion. That's all, finish. I mean, just finish that. Why do mention all these things? And why do mention steps? So what we can learn from all these things, what we have to do with all these things? That's a big question, isn't it? Every verse of Bhagavatam has something to teach us. If there's no teaching, some practical teaching, then it's waste. Why are we reading Bhagavatam? As story? But on the other hand, Bhagavatam is saram, saram, udaharitam. Bhagavatam is essence of essence of essence. And even Vyasadev, when he wrote, Vyasadev, when he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, he was thinking. We know from first canto. And then every word, he chose every word. Uttama shloka gunanu manana. He chose every word. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Uttama shloka, Krishna is called Uttama shloka. He's praised by the choicest of poetry. The choicest words he's praised. In Bhagavatam, he used every word very carefully because it's the essence of essence of essence. He can't afford to waste even a single letter. Otherwise, it will become another scripture. And ordinary, it's not then essence. So in essence, he used minimal words, isn't it? And the most important words, just like nectar of instruction, like that. So every word is important for us. Now you might say, well, Dhyana Yoga is explained because to say it's not practical, and then to leave it. In fact, I mean to say in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains in 6th chapter Dhyana Yoga. All these steps. But then why did Krishna explain Dhyana Yoga if it was not possible for Arjuna and Kali Yuga? The whole question was, Krishna explained that Dhyana Yoga to impress upon us that yes, there are systems like that in Vedas, and of course in Kali Yuga people will practice it, which people are doing, Dhongi Gurus, but it's not possible. Through Arjuna, Krishna made sure that this process is rejected. If Krishna would not have introduced this chapter in Bhagavad Gita, he would have simply said, "Tu bhakti, that's all, finish," you know. Then so many people are doing this Dhyana Yoga and we would not know what they are doing. It's not mentioned in our book, our main book, Gita, and even in Bhagavatam, whether it's accepted, rejected, and then they will show in scriptures. Dhyan Bindu Upanishad, it's there in Vedas. You are nonsense. We don't have... So Krishna made a plan to introduce 6th chapter. That was one reason. That is one reason why Dhyana Yoga is mentioned in Bhagavatam and also Bhagavad Gita. Another reason is... Now why Sukadeva Goswami is taking pain and Vyasadeva is taking pain to describe all the 8 steps which Dhruva is doing here. Now, of course... Here the reason is, so another reason to mention the steps of Dhyana Yoga is, especially in Bhagavatam, especially here in this context, is that we can learn from these steps. As devotees, Yagya Sankirtane Praya Rejanti Sumeta. So they are very intelligent. And Anukulase Sankalpar Patikulase Varjanam, whatever is favorable, take it. The process. So if the process is favorable, they will take it. If the process is not favorable, they will take the principle from the process. and they will use it. This is devotee, and the example given is, Krishna gives example 11th canto. If you fall on the ground, how do you get up from the ground? By using the same ground. Suppose you are running on the road and you fall down. So how do you get up? You take the support of the same road and get up. Isn't it? You are running in the park and you fall down. And then how do you get up? You take the support of the same floor, the same ground by your hands and then get up slowly, or by your legs and you get up slowly. Isn't it? So the whole point is devotees have this intelligence, and Krishna says devotees learn from this material world. If you want to escape from this material world, use this material world. Otherwise, you are, it will be a problem. If you fall down on the ground, and if you don't want to take help of the ground to get up, how will you get up? You can't hold air to get up. You can't do that. You can't hold fire. You have to take support of the ground by your feet or by your hand and then get up. So, similarly, if you have fallen into this material world that we have, there's no doubt. I don't have to give a lecture on this. We are in material world. If you have forgotten this, sorry for that. If we think we are in Golok because we are in temple, sorry for that. You have forgotten that your Golok is there in material world now. That's the whole idea. Even if a Golok is not a material world, consciousness is a material world. What to do about that? So we are in material world. So because we have fallen into material world, we have to use the same material world to get out of this. This is Krishna's intelligence. No matter whatever other yogis or philosophers they might say, but they are fool number one. For us, Krishna is the most intelligent person. We respect his intelligence. He's a master. And we will do whatever he says. We will think whatever he says. We will consider whatever he says is right. We want to see this world through the eyes of Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. That's Krishna's opinion. Matam idam. That is my opinion. Yagyadantapa karma bhavnani manishina. Iti me matavidam. This is my opinion. Krishna says again and in Bhagavad Gita, this is my opinion. This is my opinion. Why he says? Because there are so many opinions of the same thing. There are so many opinions of this Ashtanga Yoga, of Vedas. So, but Krishna has his own opinion, and devotion is all about accepting his opinion. So why? So the whole point is, devotees use the same. Devotees learn from this material world, from everything in this material world, and use it to serve God. Now, what we can learn from Ashtanga Yoga here, as a devotee, for us, especially for us who are in this age, Kali Yuga, who are actually doing just Harinam Kirtan. I mean to say, we are not following Dhyana Yoga process. So of course, why we are not following Dhyana Yoga process, that's a different question. But the whole point is what we can learn. So the whole point we can learn is, you see, the whole point from Dhyana Yoga, there are a few things to learn, and that's what I want to just comment before proceeding further. And the whole thing is, yam and niyam, those first two steps, which actually it's not Prabhupada says in 4th canto, somewhere in the purport, 11th canto purport, that every step of the Dhyana Yoga has got to teach to devotees something. And yam and niyam, so yam niyam means what you don't have to do, yam, and niyam means what you have to do. So the whole idea is, so here it's mentioned Vishuddha Karna. By not doing some things, Vishuddha Karna, your heart becomes pure. Now that's the whole point. The first thing, you have to make your heart pure. And for that, we have regulations. No illicit sex, no gambling, and no. That we don't have to do. Otherwise, our heart doesn't become pure. Now the whole point is, if the heart doesn't become pure, then you can't go on higher steps like dharana, dhyana, samadhi. You can't fix your mind. If your senses do not become pure, we are talking about senses, which includes mind. If your senses doesn't become pure, you will not be able to fix your mind. It's simple. So the whole point is, controlling mind needs purity. You can't control your mind just by thinking, God, from now I will chant and then control my mind and fix it on chanting. It will never happen. Because for that preparation is required. For that yam niyama is required. For that you need to actually avoid doing those things which will actually harm your purity. That is, and you have to do those things which will help you to remain pure. And what are those things? You have to remain away from demoniac qualities and develop virtues in your life. That's the whole point I'm trying to bring. Yam niyam. What do you have to do? The whole point, Patanjali says, you have to cultivate virtues, good qualities. Now you see. The whole point is, so many devotees ask how to control mind. That's FAQ, isn't it? Prabhu, I cannot control mind. I'm chanting since so many years. What to do? So what to do means, of course, we are not going to practice Dhyana Yoga. But then what to do? So there's a secret which we can learn. The whole process of Yam Niyama Patanjali is aimed at developing virtues or good qualities. That is Divya Guna, which is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. 16th chapter, 13th chapter, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, simplicity, Amanitvam, giving respect to others, isn't it? Tapas, austerities, virtues, truthfulness, and then charitable, all these good qualities, tolerance. Mahaprabhu mentions some of these qualities, humbleness, tolerance, giving respect. But then there's a whole list there. In 13th chapter, there's so many virtues which we can develop in a life, and by developing those virtues, then our mind gets controlled. It is, you can never control your mind by suppressing, and that's the whole point. If suppose a devotee comes in the temple and he starts chanting, okay, chant Hare Krishna, and then of course he's falling four legs chanting. But then he'll not be able to fix his mind. Now he might be trying to bring his mind back. Okay, I'll bring my mind back. Today I will fix my mind on chanting. It'll not happen because that is pratyahar, bringing your mind back, and dharana. But then there are other steps in Patanjali before that. So we're not following the process, but we're taking the principle. The principle is, whatever the process is, the principle doesn't change. You might have Maruti, you might have Rolls Royce, you might have Jaguar, but the principle is engine. So the process is different, but the principle is same. If you want to control your mind, you have to develop good qualities. A controlled mind is born of good qualities. That's the whole idea. That's what scripture says. Without developing good qualities, you can never control your mind. It's impossible. Otherwise we are not controlling mind, we are suppressing mind. We're just trying to bring it back, put it. Of course, we are not saying that when you chant, you don't try to bring your mind back. You try to do that, but at the same time, the real solution is develop good qualities when you are associating, when you are sitting with devotees or leading your life. The more the good virtues are there in your life, the more Vishuddha Karana, and the more this virtues in your life, the more it's easy to control your mind and fix it on chanting. And Mahaprabhu chose three virtues, humbleness, tolerance, and giving respect. But then there are others, which we can get the list from 16th chapter, 13th chapter. And that's very important. That's what we have to keep in mind. A controlled mind is not born of suppression. It is born of good qualities. Now that's one thing which we can learn here. So we have to behave in such a way, we have to act in such a way, we have to speak in such a way that we develop good qualities at every moment. But before that, you should know what are good qualities. And those list is there in 16th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. So that's the whole point. That is one thing we can learn from this whole Dhyana Yoga thing. And the other thing is, avyavahito, which I mentioned. Dhruva crossed all obstacles and anarthas. He crossed all obstacles and anarthas. That's the whole thing. And then desire of God. So to cross all the obstacles, and the main obstacle is our personal desires, personal agendas, personal plans, which we have to throw them away to actually unite with God. Otherwise, it will not happen. I mean to say, you see, simply chanting. If you're chanting and then if you're trying to bring your mind and doing and trying to bring your mind while chanting 16 rounds over, and then in your life you're doing whatever you want, and you're not even behaving properly, you're not trying to develop good qualities in your life, that will never happen. Your progress will be slow, very slow. Because the whole material world is designed to infuse bad qualities in us. So, but if you want to conquer bad qualities, there's this one way to develop good qualities. Sat sangatvam nihi sangatvam. You cannot, a thorn by a thorn, a qualities by qualities. Bad qualities are countered by good qualities. And we're surrounded by bad people and bad qualities. So how to counteract them? By good qualities. That's all. So that's one, that's the important thing which we can learn. Now, the whole question here is, now there are two questions actually, very important. And that's why we have to go to the next verse now. And the whole question is, there are two questions. The first question is, why Dhruva? Why people were doing Dhyana Yoga and Satya Yoga? Now, I just mentioned in the last lecture that Dhruva is somewhere between Satya Yoga and Treta Yoga because he was doing sacrifices also. But anyway, I mean to say, he was also into Dhyana Yoga because it's a junction. So if we take Dhruva to be in Satya Yoga, for practical purposes, he's doing Dhyana Yoga. But then the whole point is, why people in Satya Yoga are doing Dhyana Yoga? But they're so foolish that they didn't know that the devotion to Krishna is the supreme. And in fact, the next verse, that's what I wanted to bring. The next verse talks about devotion. Prabhupada writes, because of his transcendental bliss, incense and tears, his heart melted, standing of airs, thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, became liberated from material bondage. And Prabhupada says, Prabhupada begins, due to constant engagement in devotional service, 4.12.18. The next verse talks about devotion, and Sukadeva Goswami says he was doing devotion. So what's happening? He was practicing Dhyana Yoga or he was doing devotion? And then, so what's happening? He was Dhyana Yoga, devotion, are they same? Are they different? If they're different, then why was he practicing Dhyana Yoga first of all? If he was such a great devotee, he was a devotee. Prabhupada says he was a Mahabhagavat in the purport in 4.12.18. Because he's already seen God. For 5 years he saw God. And why need to practice Dhyana Yoga? And he's a devotee and he used to do Shravanam and Kirtanam. Why Dhyana Yoga? That's the first question when Dhruva is concerned. And now here Sukadeva Goswami says he's doing devotion. So then what's happening? He did first Dhyana Yoga and then devotion? Why? Why is that? Why didn't he go directly to Bhakti Yoga? Is Bhakti Yoga so incapable that we need Dhyana Yoga? What's happening? Or did Dhruva Maharaj have no understanding that Bhakti Yoga is superior to Dhyana Yoga? We can go directly to Bhakti Yoga? Or Bhakti Yoga doesn't have power to accomplish everything that it needs, the support of Dhyana Yoga? Something is wrong there. Because these two verses are together. Previously is Dhyana Yoga, previous verse, and this verse 4.12.18, it is Bhakti Yoga. Something weird, isn't it? So this is about Dhruva. Now, the whole point is, Dhruva knew, Prabhupada says in 4.12.18, Dhruva was a Mahabhagavat. He was already a Mahabhagavat. And he was a first-class devotee. That's why he's getting all these symptoms. Tears and sattvic vikar, tears, horripilations. His heart is melting, Sandranatma, Visheshatma, all these symptoms of love, the definition of love, all these symptoms which Mahaprabhu has. So he knows the value of devotion. He's a devotee. He's not a born devotee. Of course, he became a devotee, but 5 years. But now it's the end of his life. And so then why did he take to Dhyana Yoga? That's the whole point. Now, the whole point in this is, why did it Dhyana Yoga? Because of Lok Sangraha. That's the word used. Lok Sangraha. Lok Sangraha means to set an example for other people in Satyoga. Now we know that in Kritaya Dhyayate Vishyam, the whole process of Satyoga is Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga was not required for Dhruva. He could have simply done this verse, Bhaktim Harau Bhagavati. Could have done Bhakti Shravan and Kirtanam. He knew Shravan, he knows Shravan Kirtan is the highest, holy names are highest. But to set an example for others, because everybody else in Satyuga is not a devotee. I mean to say, Satyuga has many of the people in Satyuga are Paramahamsas, as we discussed. They're perfect, almost perfect. Almost perfect, yeah. But the whole point is, that's the general norm of Satyuga. But then there are many other people who are virtuous, who are very strong body, and who have all good qualities with them. They are almost on the verge of perfection, but they need to perfect their lives. So Satyuga, everybody's Paramahamsa in the sense, but the whole point is, they're almost perfect. That means they have not yet seen God face to face. That's the whole idea. Some have seen, and they're very powerful. They are in the rule. People look up to them who have seen God face to face. But then many other people have not seen face to face. The perfection of life is to see God face to face. Yadi tumar apun kripa, yadi tumar charan udaye, Gopi says. We think in Chaitanya Charitamrita, We will consider your mercy as complete and perfect only when your lotus feet manifests in our heart. In other words, only when we see you face to face. Otherwise, we don't think we have perfected a life. Now, that's the whole point there. So to see God face to face, they have to do something. That last bit of effort they have to put. Otherwise, they are pure. They have all good qualities, they have understanding of devotion. Now the whole point is Satyuga people, they understand that devotion is the highest. Now the whole question is, of course, let's leave Dhruva. The first question is, why Satyuga people are practicing Dhyana Yoga? Didn't they know that Bhakti is the highest? I mean to say, they could have simply done Bhakti. If they are so pure, if they are so virtuous, just take Bhakti and they are so knowledgeable. Just do Bhakti. Vedas are very clear that Bhakti is supreme. Dhyana Yoga and all these processes are not the supreme process. So then why Satyuga people are doing Dhyana Yoga? And why the Yuga process, why the Yuga Dharma of Satyuga is Dhyana Yoga? It should be Bhakti Yoga directly. That's all. Finish. In fact, for all Yugas. But you know what? God is intelligent and whatever He does is correct. And there are two reasons why Dhyana Yoga is a Yoga Dharma of Satyuga. In spite of the fact, everybody knows that devotion is the highest. Chanting of holy names, Shravanam Kirtanam, is the highest. It is not that in Kali Yuga we are doing Shravanam Kirtanam because we cannot do Dhyana Yoga in Kali Yuga, because we are incapable, that's why we are doing Shravan Kirtan. This is what Jnanis like to say. Because you're incapable to do Dhyana Yoga, so you do Shravan Kirtanam. That's an offense against Shravanam and Kirtanam. Shravanam Kirtanam is not below the process of Dhyana Yoga. They're the highest, they're always the highest, they're always the supreme and always the most powerful. The whole problem in Kali Yuga is not because the process is deficient, but because we are nonsense and we cannot practice Dhyana Yoga along with Bhakti Yoga. That's the whole point. That's why Dhyana Yoga is not there in Kali Yuga. Now the whole point is, the whole point in Satyuga, because people are strong, they are virtuous, and they are very pure, the process they recommended is Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga is process recommended to actually reach Bhakti Yoga. Everybody knows in Satyuga that Bhakti Yoga is supreme. Everybody knows that names of Vishnu are supreme, Shravanam Kirtan is supreme, but then there are two problems in Satyuga. And the whole problem in Satyuga is purity. Now that's a contradiction. Now that's a funny thing, because they're so pure and they're so virtuous, and the whole atmosphere in Satyuga is so peaceful and devoid of all kind of negative evil things. The atmosphere is so conducive and so peaceful, and so in Satyuga there are no no major diseases, no obstacles, everything is nice, and the mind is nice, environment is nice, I mean it's pure, everything is pure. That is actually meaning of Satya Yoga. Satya means truth. Truth means purity. Satya Yoga is also called Krita Yoga. Krita Yadhyayata Vishnum. Krita Yoga means, Krita in Sanskrit means strength. They have strength of body, strength of mind, strength of the atmosphere. Atmosphere, the environment around them also gives them strength because it's pure. So, but you know what? Often, what is a quality? That also becomes a drawback. That's the whole point. Sometimes strength becomes a weakness, and sometimes weakness becomes strength. Now the whole strength becomes a drawback in the sense they are so pure, so Krishna expects from them more than from us in Kali Yuga. It's very easy to understand. I mean to say, if a child writes A, B, C on the paper, a lot of difficulty, you will appreciate him like anything. Oh, it's so nice. This. But if a fifth class boy writes A, B, C, you will say, come on, you're a fool. Nonsense. Write some sentence. You expect from him more because he knows more. He has more knowledge. He has more capabilities. Isn't it? So if a child simply stands and starts walking and then falls down and then stands and starts walking, you will encourage him, oh, wow, it's so nice. You're walking. But if a five-year-old child, if he starts walking, say, come on, there is no praise in that, isn't it? Because you start expecting more from them because they have more facilities. So they are more pure, the environment is pure, Krishna has given them a pure atmosphere, pure planet, everything. So the expectations are high. They need to do more. They need to fix their mind for a greater amount of length than us who are surrounded, Kali Yuga people who are surrounded by so many evil things. Even a slight devotion will give more benefit in Kali Yuga, because anybody who can do even slightest of devotion in such a useless atmosphere, in such a hyper-sexual atmosphere, such a hyper-evil atmosphere, which is very difficult to do, just like a child, if he starts walking, in spite of his brain is immature, and he gets up and walk and then falls down. Oh wow, this is good. But in Kali Yuga, but in Satya Yuga, it's the way around. Everything is nice, everything is pure. So Krishna expects, yeah, okay, fine. I've given you facilities. I've made the environment pure. I've made the environment free of thing. I've given you virtues. So we have to. It is more is expected from you. So from them, for them, they must meditate. They must do devotion for a longer time. And that's why Prabhupada says, Valmiki, he did meditation for 60,000 years. So they must do devotion for a longer time. So well, then you might say, okay, fine. So they can keep on chanting for a longer time. That's all. They can keep on chanting. But then there's another problem. And the whole problem is, they can keep on chanting for 60,000 years. That's the whole thing. But then why Dhyan Yoga? Because the whole point is in Kali Yuga, even a small because in Satya Yuga, even a small offense have greater punishment, even slightest of offense, because they're so pure and everything is so conducive. So if you make a mistake, you'll be punished more. From Krishna's perspective, if you look from Krishna's perspective, you will understand. Krishna will say, you see the point. You had all facilities. Everything was nice. Environment was nice. There was no problems of disease, and you have so many virtues. I've given you virtues in you, and your body is also strong. I've given you so well. So then, why mistake? If an expert dancer does a mistake, he will be scolded. If a new practicing dancer he does a mistake, okay, he'll be encouraged. So similarly, in Kali Yuga, because we are so immature, so disturbed, even a slight devotion, okay, good, encouragement. And mistakes, no problem, forget it. Mistakes, maafe, forgiven. Some evil thought, forgiven in Kali Yuga. But in Satya Yuga, it's not that. Even a single evil thought, you'll be punished. There'll be a reaction. Even a single mistake, an offense, there'll be a reaction. Not only reaction, but the also, but the whole point is Satyuga people, because they're so pure, they are very sensitive also. They're very sensitive. They are sensitive for offenses. Hare Krishna, actually somebody has, yeah. So so they are very sensitive actually. They are very sensitive to offense and sins, because they are very pure. I mean to say, you look at all of us in Kali Yuga. We are doing sins after sins and have no problems at all. We are so happy. You are doing offense and offense after offense. We have don't know guilt about that. But in Satyuga, we read stories in Satyuga. A small mistake happened by one rishi and he cut his hands. Cut his hands. To hell with his hands. That kind of sensitivity was there. A rishi, he just saw a female by his eyes, and some one bad thought came, he just pierced his eyes out. You see the point, that they're very sensitive because of that purity. You see the point there? Because they're sensitive to offense and sins, they don't want that when they chant, their mind should go here and there. Because they don't want that Krishna should become unhappy. Because they know offense makes Krishna sad. They're pure, they can perceive this. It makes Krishna sad, and they cannot think of making God sad. They cannot even think of that fact. So because they're very sensitive, so Krishna says, okay, fine. So first do Dhyan Yoga. Go in trance. Go in trance, decontact from your body and mind, then there will be absolutely no offense, no sin, because your mind is not there. You have gone beyond mind and body. You've gone beyond mind and body. So there are no chance of offense, no chance of sin. They are happily in samadhi. And in trance, then they do devotion, then they chant the holy names. So then they are able to chant holy names nicely. They are not disturbed by the fact of purity. You see the point there. So in Satyuga, because they are so pure, it's helpful, but then there is a drawback also. There is a dark side also. So that's why Krishna had to introduce Dhyan Yoga. So Dhyan Yoga is a Yuga Dharma, not because to replace Bhakti Yoga, but because it is anukula to Bhakti Yoga. You see the point? That's the whole point there. It is anukul to Bhakti Yoga. Just like Varnashrama, Tritayam, Jatoma Khai. In Treta Yuga, people used to sacrifices. Sacrifice means Varnashrama. Varnashrama was very anukul to Bhakti Yoga. So Dhyan Yoga process in Satyuga, that's a Yuga Dharma, not because Bhakti Yuga is not supreme and they didn't know that, about that, but because it is very conducive for the people who are born in that age. They can simply do Dhyan Yoga, go in trance, and then they don't have any problem of doing offense and thinking wrong and some reactions and their whole... So they're not disturbed from inside because they're very sensitive. They're very sensitive to this offense and sin and very sensitive to the fact that God becomes sad. Then they can't really focus on God. They'll be disturbed and they'll feel guilt. So there's a lot of guilt in them. And then that will be obstruction in their whole meditation on a whole chanting of God. So, okay, Krishna, it's fine. Do Dhyan Yoga, go into trance, and then sit for 60,000, and then keep on chanting in trance. So that's why Prabhupada says here. Prabhupada mentions here, this transformed in a trance of devotional service. You see the point Prabhupada says. In a trance of devotional service, 4.12.18, Prabhupada says, in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence. In trance, he entered trance, and then he was doing devotion. So of course, Satyuga people were doing Dhyan Yoga because of that. But now the whole question is, why Dhruva is doing Dhyan Yoga? Because he's already a devotee. He's already surpassed all those stages. I mean, he has seen God face to face. Those people were doing Dhyan Yoga and then chanting for so many years, and then they were having darshan of Lord face to face, then their life is perfect. But Dhruva has seen Lord face to face at the age of 5 years. He has done that. So he could have simply, he could just keep on chanting and no problem. But he also didn't do, because to set an example, because Yuga Dharma of Satyuga is Dhyan Yoga, so he must set an example, otherwise people will get confused. Because people have not seen God face to face, and they have to see, so they have to follow the process. So for them he's doing, that is Yajadacharati Sheshta Tatta Deva Jarachana Lava Lok Sangraha. He's practicing, and that's why he didn't need to do, but he did, and then he was doing devotion. So the whole point is, he didn't get liberation. Mukta linga, that's there, the word liberation. He didn't become free from the body. I mean, to say, so he did devotional service, and then the text is, thus he became liberated from bodily bondage. He forgot his bodily existence, and he became liberated from material bondage. The word uses mukta linga, Prabhupada says. He became decontacted from his gross body and subtle body. The whole point is, that was not due to dhyana yoga, that was due to bhakti yoga. Only bhakti yoga is capable to give liberation. There is no other process which can give you liberation from the body. There is no other process which can decontact you, mukta linga, or asmarat, which can make you forget your bodily existence, gross body and subtle body, decontact you from your body, and then actually revive your own spiritual form. Only bhakti can do it completely. No other process can do it completely and in a perfect way. So Dhruva, although Dhruva practiced Dhyana Yoga, it was not because of Dhyana Yoga he attained liberation. Because he was already liberated. The whole point is. But the philosophy is, even if you do Dhyana Yoga, it is Bhakti Yoga which will lead you to perfection and liberation. And Sadyuga people knew this, but they were using Dhyana Yoga as a favorable, as an anukul process to Bhakti Yoga. That's all. That's the whole point. But and why Dhruva practiced? Just for Lok Sangraha. So that's the whole point. The previous verse, Sukadeva Goswami mentions about the process of Dhyana Yoga because of two reasons. Now you see the point. Why the previous verse talks about Dhyana Yoga at length, at 8 steps. Why? So that the first point is that we can learn something from that process as devotees. And the next point is, now you can understand, the next point is because Dhruva was doing because to help others, to actually follow the Yoga Dharma, so that people don't get confused. Their life becomes perfect. He's perfect, but he wants them to become perfect, isn't it? That's the whole point. So he did. The whole point is, in the previous verse, there's a whole spirit of sacrifice and helping others. To help others, he did all those things. He spent his time and energy to do Dhyana Yoga again, which he did before. He didn't require that for himself, but he did for others. He took this pain to show that this is the system you should go, this is the best, and then you practice devotion, it will be good for you. So the whole point is, in the previous verse, 4.12.17, the whole spirit, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking about Dhyana Yoga. So many times in Bhagavatam, this process of Dhyana Yoga is explained, so many rishis doing, but here the spirit behind that verse is to help others. That's what Dhruva was doing, to help others. That's the name Dhruva, determination. He's determined to perfect his life, and he's determined to perfect others' life. And to perfect other lives, you sometimes have to do sacrifice. You cannot perfect others' lives without sacrifice. That's impossible. For oneself, you can do something, but for oneself also you have to sacrifice, but for others you have to sacrifice a lot. You might not actually, as a devotees, we might not need to do so many things in devotion, but we must do if it helps others. If it helps to set an example, we should not shy off from doing so many things which are not required for us but for others. And that's the whole point. Our actions should be based on, not on the point that it is good for me, but on the consideration that it is good for others also. I mean, this is not just on ourselves. That's not the point. It's good for others. And then we should take a decision, and those kind of actions we should do. Even if we think these kind of actions are unnecessary for us, still we have to do, just like Dhruva did, Dhyana Yoga process. And that's why I told these two verses are linked together. So he did devotion, and then he attained perfection. And what is the perfection of devotion? So I'll just finish, I'll just end here. Just mentioning the last point. Perfection of devotion is, when you become perfect, how do you know you become perfect? There are three signs here in this verse, 4.12.18. And one of the signs is ecstatical symptoms. That we all know. We get ecstatical symptoms. But Prabhupada mentions, you cannot get ecstatical symptoms unless you're very advanced. You cannot get ecstatical symptoms unless you enter samadhi. That's the whole point. We are not going into the Dhyana Yoga process, but I told you we can learn from the Dhyana Yoga process. And one of the points is, unless you don't get samadhi, you will not get ecstatical symptoms. Samadhi means, for us, For us, samadhi means uniting your desire with the desire of God. Of course, we follow bhakti yoga process to reach samadhi, but we have to reach samadhi. So we follow shravan kirtan. Now we keep on following shravan kirtan, and the day where we get purified by the process of bhakti yoga, and we get purified, and when we get purified, then one day our desire will get united with the desire of God. We will not desire anything else. No agendas, no plans, no desires, personal desires, not even temptations, not even slightest of accident. So at that time you will get ecstatic symptoms. That time you will get tears and horripilations. So then you might say, well, now also I get tears. What about that? But my desire is not one with desire of God. Still I have lust, anger, greed. I am doing so many crazy things which is not desire of Krishna, we know. Then what are these tears? So then Prabhupada says, no, those tears are actually shadow of that reality. Those tears are not ecstatic symptoms. They are just some emotions, some emotional outburst. That's not wrong. That's okay. But we should understand that that's emotion, that's on mental platform. That's nothing to do with actually real ecstatic symptoms. The real fruit of devotion, that's not there. But we have to aim for reality and not illusion. We should not be confused if we get tears. Because Prabhupada says only after an advanced stage we have to link from previous verse, only when you enter samadhi, that is, your desire becomes absolutely one with desire of God, then we get its ecstatic symptoms. Otherwise it's a shadow or a reflection. And the second symptom of perfection of devotion is actually asmaradasau. You will forget your body. Both gross body and subtle body. You will forget your mind also. That's the whole point. And a spiritual mind will get activated. That's a very different thing. Now you're not working through mind and your false ego is finished. Now you are working on a spiritual platform. You will actually not be entrusted. Here forget means you will not be entrusted in anything. That's the whole point. Forget doesn't mean that that you will become, of course you sometimes become unconscious also. But then when you're working in this material world, Prabhupada was perfect, but if Prabhupada was perfect and he was preaching, he was living in this material world, but although he was in material world, he was never in the material world. Although he was in this body, he was never in this body. Because he didn't have to do, he had no interest in them. So that's the point. Forgetting means having no interest in mind, intelligence, ego, subtle body, nothing. That's the second symptom. And the third symptom is muktalinga. Because you have no interest, so you decontact from your body, subtle body. And when you decontact from your body, subtle body, then your own spiritual form, muktalinga. Linga also means form. So you decontact from your illusory form, mind and body, and your original spiritual form, that gets activated. So these are the three symptoms we are looking for perfection and devotion. And until unless we don't get these three symptoms, we should not stop with devotion. We have to keep on increasing our efforts day by day and not get confused that I have achieved perfection. That's not the whole point. Ecstatic symptoms, forgetting this material. Forgetting means have absolutely, I mean to say, they can say have no interest, but saying no interest doesn't actually help us to get the intensity of how much no interest. No, forgetting this material, that's the whole point. Absolutely no interest. And the third is muktalinga, your whole spiritual form is revealed. And decontact, like Prabhupada gives an example of coconut, like a dry coconut actually separates itself from the shell when it becomes dry. Similarly, you will separate yourself from gross body and mental body from inside. These are the perfection. Dhruva Maharaj reached that, but simultaneously he was for practicing Dhyana Yoga to actually establish, to help Lord to establish Yuga Dharma of Satyuga, Dhyana Yoga, not because Dhyana Yoga was superior to Bhakti Yoga, but because Dhyana Yoga is very anukul, favorable to Bhakti Yoga and Satyuga, which most of the people in Satyuga need to meet God face to face. But for Dhruva, that was not the case. He already met God face to face. He didn't need, but still he was doing. And that Dhyana Yoga for the benefit and help of others. So that's these two verses. You can read together. And you can go and read the purport there. Again, 4.12.18 and 4.12.17. And I'll just stop there. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So any questions and comments now? I'm done. I'm very much over time, sorry for that, but I can't control. I just spoke. I'll keep on speaking. That's all. Yeah. Any questions or anything?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the wonderful class. Prabhuji, the last 3 steps that you were mentioning about perfection, is that a linear process, or is that a linear, after one step you go to the next step, and then after the second step?
Actually, that's a process, that's the whole process. In previous 17 and 18, you have to link. So previous is samadhi. First step is, when you keep on doing devotion, first you will reach samadhi. Not through the process of dhyan yoga, but through the process of devotion, in our case. So samadhi means the first symptom which will come is your desire will unite with the desire of Lord. You will stop desiring anything else, any agendas, personal things. And then when you advance further, then the next step is these ecstatic symptoms, ananda, bhashpa, kalaya, all these tears and all these. And then when you advance more, then further next symptom, that is you will forget your body and subtle body. You will start separating from your body and subtle body. You'll start separating. That means you will start losing interest in your body and subtle body as well. Your mind, intelligence, false ego. And that means you will be able to recognize the difference between mind, intelligence, and ego. You will be able to see those 3 separately. And then the 4th step is, if you advance more, then the 4th step is mukta linga. You become liberated. You decontact from subtle body and body, cross body, and you gain your original spiritual form. So that these are the 4 steps which will happen on the journey of a devotional service when we become perfect. So when you approach the goal, these 4 posts will come, and then by these signposts you can see, oh yes, I am on the end of this devotional path. By these 2 verses we can understand.
So, Prabhuji, when we practice, or when we see devotees practicing for a long time, we see that they're slowly becoming detached from their body, or not identifying themselves with the body, not on the bodily platform. So, is that basically?
No. That's shadow. That's not reality. I mean to say, that's shadow, because. Because the whole point is, because the first signpost is samadhi. And samadhi means your desire is united with the desire of Lord. There is no other desire, no other anartha. Almost no other anartha. So we see devotees who are not interested in material world, not interested in body, but at the same time they're still lust, anger, greed, isn't it? I mean to say, if you talk about abhasa, Lord, so many anartha. So then what's happening? So they are perceiving the shadow of these stages when they're advancing. By the mercy of Krishna, by His mercy, He's giving this shadow. Okay, this is something is going to happen like this when you become perfect. So get going like that. So we should not get confused that is something real object. We're getting shadow by mercy of Krishna to encourage us. Now we have to go ahead and catch the real substance. We are in the shadow of the tree, but we are not on the tree. And we have to go on the tree. So we should not get confused that the shadow is a tree.
Shadow is basically just encouragement for the devotee.
Yes, of course. That's encouragement. I mean to say, if you have... suppose if you're in a desert, scorching sun, and there's a tree, and then you approach a tree, but first the shadow will fall on you. Before you go in the shade. So even the shadow will actually give you relief from the sunlight, from the heat. And when you're in the shade, that's perfect. But you don't remain in the shadow and you don't say, okay, this is enough. No, I have to go in the shade, because the shadow is going to go back. When the sun sets, when the sun goes in a different direction, shadow will vanish. So these symptoms are like shadow. It is there, it will vanish, it will come, it will go. So quickly you have to go under the shade. You have to go to this real thing. And how do we know what's the real and what's illusion? By the steps. That's why if you're not on the samadhi, then you can't have real steps, further steps. It can't happen like that.
Okay, yeah, got it. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanavad Pranam. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Very, very nice class. Nice analysis of Bhakti Yoga and Dhyana Yoga. So, yesterday we were reading Gajendra's prayers, and we had a question on that you know, when Indradyumna was actually in trance and he couldn't welcome Agastya Muni, and he was cursed by him. So, I mean, it was mentioned that he was in trance and he didn't, I don't know exactly if it was trance, but he was meditating and he didn't see the sage, but he cursed to become dull like an infant.
Actually that was not the point, that he was in trance and he didn't see. Because of not noticing, he was cursed. Because the Agatsya Rishi, I think it was Agatsya Rishi, no, isn't it, who actually cursed him?
So he came,
and he, of course, he could understand that if a person is in trance, he can't notice. Agatsya Muni is not so foolish, so he can understand that. Like for example, Lord Shiva, when he was in the assembly of Daksha, he was in a trance. And Daksha came and he said, come on, he didn't get up, he's so foolish. And so he actually did offense against Lord Shiva. But then the text says it was not an offense because he was really in a trance. He couldn't notice it. And Daksha should have understood this point. And that's why he didn't get up. That was one of the reasons that he didn't get up. That was one of the main reasons in the Daksha thing. And that's why Daksha did offense, in spite of Shiva didn't do offense. But here in the case of Indradyum, the problem was, it was not that, so it was not the same thing what happened with Shiva and Daksha. This Indradyum Maharaj, he was in a trance, and obviously he can't notice if you're in trance because you're decontacted. But Agastya Muni, by his vision, by his spiritual vision, he could see that in his heart he's got pride of trance. He's proud of his trance. He thinks that now I have achieved trance and I'm greater than all the rishis. And because he got proud, that's why Agastya Muni cursed him. He said, oh, okay, so you're proud. I curse you to become like an elephant, to become dull like an elephant. You're proud? Okay. So your proud will be crushed because you'll become dull like an elephant. And that's what your whole punishment is. And he became a little. That's what has happened. Because until unless you don't see God face to face, there is always chances of pride. I mean to say, lust, anger, they are over because you're in trance. You have actually surpassed those things. That's why pride is so dangerous, more than lust, anger, greed, because you can simply get fried because I have attained samadhi. So that's why seeing God face to face, that's the final thing. Before that, you're not perfect. You can be allured by pride at any time. But when you see God face to face, then you're humbled. Then you really understand that this person who is there in front of me, he's the cause of everything. He's even the cause of my efforts, the power of my efforts, which I'm putting. He's there. There's nothing to be proud of because everything is his. And actually, he is leading us. We are just taking some small, tiny steps. But he's inspiring us more than what we are putting effort. So that when you see God, it becomes clear. But before that, there's always nasta prayeshu abhadreshu. There's some slight disanartha of pride, and it can always come back. So Agastya Muni noticed and he cursed him because of that.
Oh yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. That makes sense. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so many things make sense.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Your class was very wonderful. You were covering all the different aspects and presenting logically also. It's very helpful for me, Prabhu. Especially I like the point about the qualities, how developing nice qualities will help us control the mind and hence perform our devotion service nicely. That's a very nice thing I took, Prabhu, from the class. It is inspiring. Yeah, a couple of things around that I wanted to ask you, Prabhu. One is just to confirm the understanding or correct my understanding. One is about many of the qualities that we read in Bhagavad Gita are promoting mode of goodness. So we also know when I'm more in mode of passion and mode of ignorance, then the mind is more disturbed. Like Prabhupada describes in first canto, first chapter also, when Kali qualities. So is this the right understanding also that the reason it's helping, qualities are helping to control our mind is because they're promoting mode of goodness or something else also? Yeah.
Absolutely right. I told you, bad qualities should be conquered by good qualities. There's no other way. You can't just suppress bad qualities. And that's by using word of goodness, we have to counteract passion and ignorance. So then we are using word of goodness as favorable to a devotional service. We are using word of goodness to go beyond word of goodness. And that's what Prabhupada says, first come to word of goodness. It is favorable to development of control of mind and then doing devotion. So you're absolutely right. We are actually increasing word of goodness to counteract passion and ignorance. Otherwise, we'll come out of lust, which is a main thing for uncontrolled mind.
Sure. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Yeah. One other question is, I'm trying to correlate with nectar of instruction, the first verse, Manovegam, the mind control. In that context, I don't know why Prabhupada chose like that, but Prabhupada describes how to control mind, and he describes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Anuvritti commentary also. In that context, what I remember was, how to control mind, Prabhupada talks about focus your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. That is one instruction he gives. And then also second thing he describes is engage your mind in thinking of Krishna. Like when you think of Krishna, there is no maya, like that. And then third thing he says is think about how to improve my service to Krishna, like that. That is the best way to control the mind, he tells also. So
that's the best way to control mind, but the whole point is we are not able to do it, isn't it? So of course all scriptures say that's the best way, but the whole point is to actually apply that way. The way is there, but application, that's the problem. And Prabhupada says in one of his lecture, bhakti is absolutely best and perfect and easy, but the application is a problem. So, and we all know by practical life, that's the problem. So to apply that, we have to use what is favorable to apply that, and the best favorable thing is these good qualities, this devi sampada, by which we can counter the bad qualities, and then we can go ahead like that.
Oh, makes sense, Prabhu. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Now it's connecting what you were saying in the class also. Yeah, how Dhyana Yoga is helping, Bhakti Yoga like that. Yeah, qualities are helping to follow up devotion to this nicely. Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Yeah. I was also appreciating the similar thing. You probably heard Shivaram Swami Maharaj is researching on Varnashrama and is trying to put it in practice also for some time in Hungary. So he also, his viewpoint is also the same thing, which is that by developing, starting of Varnashrama is developing nice qualities so that we can at least be like a human being, like that he says. Yeah. Connecting to me with this. Yeah.
Now it will connect. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah, thank you, bro. Sorry, one last question I have, Prabhu. We hear this a lot of times that when we are talking about being one with the Lord, is meaning that our desires are not selfish anymore. We are desiring what Lord desires. Like that I hear many times. Yeah. Even you mentioned a couple of times today. So I wanted to confirm, understand a little bit more. Whenever I heard that in the past, what I thought to me is like this. Okay, desire of the Lord, obviously, is the we cannot understand desire of the Lord fully. Whatever spiritual master order, that is the desire we take it, number one. And number two, how I understood it also is, what is Lord's desire? Lord's desire is, he wants me to be happy by engaging in his service. And also, he wants everyone else to be happy by engaging in his service. That means, if I'm trying to practice my devotion service properly and helping others somehow to get closer to Krishna, then I'm one with the desire of the Lord. That's how I understood it, but I wanted to understand better if that is wrong or something. What is the right understanding, Prabhu?
And I got your point. The whole point is, so you see, okay, let me ask you a question. It's a funny question, but let me ask you. How many desires your wife has? Just answer me. Just it's a very casual question. That's all. Nothing personal.
Probably a lot of them. Some of them are explicit outside. Some of them may be implicit. Yeah.
There are a lot of desires. So similarly, yes. God is God. Now you said just now you become one with desire of God, and you just stated three desires, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. A few. Yeah.
But then there are so many desires. So one with desire of God is you're one with all desires of God. And for that, you should know each and every explicit and implicit desire. And for that, you need knowledge of scriptures. And then you become one. Otherwise you don't simply don't know. Then how will you become one? So that is why to become one with desire of God, we need lot of knowledge, lot of efforts, because there are some subtle desires, there are some implicit desires, some explicit desires, and that's why Krishna say, and that's why Prabhupada says, try to understand Krishna, try to understand his desires, and try to make your desires as he desires. The more we advance, the more we understand his desire, and the more we understand, the more we become one. Of course, his desires are unlimited. Krishna's desires are unlimited, just like your wife's desires are unlimited, or any living entity's desires are unlimited. But at the same time, the more we understand his desires, the more we become one with his desires. Now, you cannot become really one with him, with his desires, because his desires are infinite. That can't finish. By the same time, becoming one with desires of Lord is as much as possible. We don't have to stop. We have to keep on going and going and going and going. That's why devotion is endless. That is why devotion is endless. That is why even Anand Shesh, even still he is practicing devotion. Lakshmi she is practicing devotion. Rather, she is doing devotion. What they are doing there? Because his desires are increasing. Krishna's desires are increasing. They are always catching on his desires. Try to understand him, fulfill him. That's why devotion will never become boring. So there's no limit to becoming one with desires of God. But the more you become one with desire of God, the more you are nearer to him, and then Krishna will decide when to actually give you like that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhu, for that. It's very helpful. Yes, yeah. It's very broad, not just one, two, three things like that. Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhu.
Okay.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Do you still have time for a question?
Yeah, okay. You can ask my question. Yeah,
okay. Okay. You were saying at one point in your talk that, suppression won't work for, I guess, controlling the mind. You have to develop good qualities. Yeah. In order to control the mind, right? Mm-hmm. Yet, we also, I'm trying to reconcile that with the fact that we do have the four regulative principles, which, and all the yamas, say no, 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 no. So, if suppression won't work, only development of good qualities would work, like the Chinnada P verse, then why do we have these four regs and the yamas,
Yeah, because good qualities can be destroyed by doing certain actions. Certain actions destroy good qualities.
That's why suppression seems to be necessary.
Suppression is necessary in initial stages, but suppression cannot lead us to perfection. That's why after yama comes niyama. You start with suppression initially because if we don't suppress a little, we will not be able to even practice virtues in life, isn't it? If suppose we are involved in illicit sex, so we can't even think of, or alcohol, you are so intoxicated, you can't even think of virtues, isn't it? So certain gross things which actually absorb you and you destroy your life, make you diseased and reduce your lifespan. That is a yoga mindset. Now, these four things are very dangerous things. So the most dangerous things you get out of it, and then you develop virtues, and then other bad qualities will go themselves. But of course, this you have to avoid, isn't it? So if you're going on a journey to some place, and the road is bad, okay, fine, just go on, the road is bad. So you will not stop the driver. So just be careful and keep on going. And suppose if it's very hot, okay, no problem, close your car and open the air condition. You can keep on going. But if suppose there are bombs on the way, on the same way, mines planted by terrorists, say, come on, you know, don't go in that way. It's crazy. You die. So these four things will kill you. They will actually destroy life. And we are even devotion. And no, these four things are very dangerous in history. They just kill people. So that's why they say, okay, avoid these four things. They'll kill your body. So they'll kill your spirit of advancing. They will kill your mind. They will make your mind dull. You will not be able to understand anything. Forget this and then practice virtues. And then you will advance, and other subtle things go themselves, like that.
Okay. That's beautiful, beautiful explanation. Yeah, so we're really talking about not suppressing the subtler anarthas, right? Okay, and also another question was, just to clarify, you're saying that Dhruva gave the example of following Dhyana Yoga, not for the sake of those of us in Kali Yuga, but more for the sake of those in Satya Yuga, and maybe even Treta Yuga.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, since there is, Krishna is explaining Dhyana Yoga in the Gita, so obviously there must be some benefit for those of us in Kali Yuga why Krishna is explaining it in the sixth chapter of Gita.
I just told in the lecture in Gita he speaks for two reasons. One is one is to let us know that there is a process like that, and in Kali Yuga people will be following this process, but then Arjuna denies it. So Krishna wants to inform us at the same time, this is not possible, don't get confused, because Kali Yuga is going to happen. And the next thing is, in, even from Gita, if you read the process of Dhyana Yoga carefully, then you can learn the principles from it and apply the same principles as favorable to devotional service. Leave the process, take the principles, and that can be done from sixth chapter also.
Okay, and when Krishna is explaining this Ashtanga Yoga, especially the last three angas, and he's saying, focus on me. Is he saying, focus on me in my form as Paramatma? Or is he saying, because it's Krishna, two-armed Krishna, who is speaking in the Gita. So my question is he saying, focus on me as Paramatma? Or is he saying, focus on me as two-armed Krishna?
Well, it depends whose devotee you are. If you're a devotee of Narayan, it's four-armed. If you're Krishna's devotee, it's four-armed Krishna. But specifically, when we talk about Dhyana Yoga, then people are focusing their mind on the four-armed Vishnu, Paramatma, in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to higher stages, then your conception develops, and your relationship develops, and then the whole mood develops, and then the form of Narayana or Krishna is revealed, and then you can go ahead like that.
Okay, just one last small question is, when you were listing the I think there's five yamas, right?
Mm-hmm.
One, you said control the senses, no stealing. That's two, no illicit sex.
Actually, my mother, you do one. So you go on net and see the five things. I was a little confused myself. So see those five things, what not to be done and what to be done. You can just see the list and then it will be much more clear. I think so.
Google.
The five things which are not to be done and five things which are to be done. It's like that.
And the niyamas are three, right? Tapasya, simplicity, and reading.
No. Niyamas are also five. You go on that and see.
Oh.
But I forgot.
Oh.
That's
okay.
Yeah, five. Okay. Okay then. Yeah, I think.
Thank you
for that.
Thank you very much.
Because I have some other class also to give now.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Thank you very much for your valuable time. Very, very Nectarian class, Prabhuji. We can end now. Next year, thanks to all the Vaishnavas. Vancha Kalpataru.
Kalpataru. Vyasya Ananta Koti Vaishnav.
Thank you.
Shri Keshavananda Prabhuji ki jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Shri
Prabhupada. Hari Bol. Bhagavatam ki jai.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.